Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Why? Well, you want to deal with a great insurance agency that opens up the door for you to get the right coverage at a price that fits your budget. Whether it's auto, home, life, business insurance. And then if something happens, that's why you have insurance. If something happens, you want them to go to work for you right away. And that's what they do because they're your partner in this. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. In Hummel's Wharf. In just a few moments, we'll be talking with Bruce Feldman, get his take on Saquon Barkley, on the Florida situation, a little bit on Michigan football as well, because there's several areas we want to cover with him, and of course the college football playoff. But first, our play-by-play call of the day.
Gesicki far side, near side, Tompkins and Hamilton. It's win it or lose it right here. Fourth and goal at the 7. Sorley up to the line of scrimmage. In the gun. Takes it. Back to pass. Blitz coming. In the end zone. Throws. Got it. Touchdown. Penn State. Juwan Johnson. And the Nittany Lions at the wire win it.
Courtesy of Learfield Sports, as heard on News Radio 1070 WKOK on Saturday night, as Penn State beat Iowa 21-19 to go to 4-0 on the season, winning the Big Ten opener on Saturday night. And with that, we bring in one of the best in the business, Bruce Feldman. Bruce, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the show.
It's good to be on with you. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with Saquon Barkley, 358 yards in all-purpose yardage on Saturday night, 211 rushing, 94 through the air, then, of course, the kick return yardage. The odd thing is, Bruce, is that when Jack Ham and I have James Franklin on the postgame show, it seems like one after another we talk about a variety of topics. We rarely ask him about Barkley. We rarely do. It's almost like it's a given maybe in some ways. This time we did with he waxed poetic. You watch him now. What are you seeing in Barkley that really makes you sit back and go,
You know, where to begin? I think the thing that just jumped out at me the other day was Reggie Bush is the most exciting college football player I feel like I've seen in about the last 10 years, or maybe more than that. And in terms of like stop, start, make people miss, moves, everything, Saquon Barkley is Reggie Bush, but in a 230-pound, you know, power running back, too. I mean, he's just, he does everything. It's, in a way, it's fitting that Penn State won on the game final play on Trace McSorley's, you know, great pass into the end zone, but it was Saquon Barkley who stepped up and stoned the linebacker rushing and doing the little things and the things that don't show up in the box score. I mean, to me, he's so much better than every other running back in college football right now. It's like a gulf between him and the next best running back. And I feel like I can speak for like the national media who watched that game. It's like, you know, basically, I think people even outside of the state of Pennsylvania and Penn State fans also have a man crush on Saquon Barkley. He's awesome.
As for, you know, for those who follow a lot of college basketball, they understand the concept of survive and advance. In college football, with the college football playoff, is that a mentality maybe that some college football fans have to adopt, or is there a different way of thinking right now?
Yeah, I think that helps in the long term, because they could be nitpicky all you want and saying, okay, well, you know, it's not like Iowa, you're going to have to be a lot better. You can't play like this the way you played against Iowa and expect to beat Ohio State on the road or something. But the reality is, you know, you're going to get everybody's best shot. And that Iowa team, you know, similar Iowa team, you know, beat Michigan there in a similar situation. So I think it's about what you do and finding a way to win and keep winning. And whether you beat Akron by 54 points or 14 points, it still counts as one win, not more than that or not less than that. So I think in the position Penn State's in, just keep getting better. Hopefully, if you're a Penn State fan, you stay healthy and kind of ride it through. And you want your team to build confidence. And I do think there's something to be said for, man, I don't think anyone in the locker room doubts Tracy McSorley's abilities or as big as Hart is. But I think it probably doesn't hurt that Tracy McSorley was, we just saw him go into a very hostile environment and lead the team down the field for a touchdown drive when the spotlight was brightest. And in some ways that's more impressive than if they won 31-0.
You did a fantastic piece with Joe Moorhead. What struck you about him, and in the course of putting it together and talking with him, what did you learn that maybe you did not know about him before?
Well, first, thanks for the kind words. I had a good, very long talk with him, but also talked to so many people who worked for him, worked with him, and just what you get a sense of is he was a guy that I don't think a lot of people knew him at UConn. Did well, didn't actually have, from talking to people close to him, wasn't like he was getting to do everything he wanted to do. Randy Edsall was the boss. There's certain things Randy Edsall wanted, so Joe Moorhead made the best of it. And then it's very fortunate how the path has led him to this way. I think the things he's learned and, tried to, really highlight that in the piece. But I think what you get is a guy who is very confident in what he's doing. And I think James Franklin, as he told me, was like, we have an identity now. And I think it's such a difference where you have a guy who's been a head coach, who has that kind of perspective, but also really knows what he's doing offensively and has so much belief and confidence in what they're doing. And I think that carries over. And when you talk to whether it's James Franklin or Barkley or McSorley or guys who work with him in Fordham or even at UConn, that's the one thing they come back to is just there's a belief in him that's more than just like a verbal confidence. There's a belief that you get, and I think that's more a lot of times that's more important than what the plays are they're running. And I think that's a common thread you see in all great coaches.
Bruce, from a national point of view, this has not been a great time for Florida. They've had so many players suspended, and it turns out that I think there are 8 of them, for example, that ended up with 62 potential felony charges. Maybe it's 9 of them. How tough is it down there right now, Bruce?
Just imagine how much worse it would be for Jim McElwain if he had lost to Tennessee, which was, right, looked like it was a certainty, and if he had lost to Kentucky, who they hadn't lost to in 30 games. It's I think internally it's a big mess there. Externally, it's embarrassing, but it would be so much worse if they had lost these games. They're fortunate to have, Kentucky kind of gifted them this last game, kind of squandered it themselves. But, I'm curious to see how this plays out because I look at this team and I think it's a 6-6 kind of team. And they found ways to win, just like, he's gotten them into the SEC title game the last 2 years, and he's a good coach and he deserves credit for that, but it's also been a really watered-down SEC East. So I think given in terms of how this is a national story, obviously with the hurricane down there, a couple of weeks ago, and some real big issues that extend way beyond football, I think it kind of put that into perspective. The Florida football issues were kind of muted. And so I think for a lot of people, it's just like, oh, this really looks bad. And you're just kind of like looking back at it now. We'll see how much worse it gets because it could, up till this week I heard it was, it was expected to get worse.
Wow. I want to ask you a couple of quick Michigan-related stories here. One of them deals with the quarterback, John O'Korn, who had transferred from Houston into Michigan. But what's interesting is that he actually grew up 35 miles from here in Huntington before going to a year at St. Thomas Aquinas. He stepped in for Wilton Spate against Purdue. What kind of spark did he give them, and how interested are you looking at that situation moving forward?
Yeah, you know, that was our game on Fox last weekend, and he played really well, especially as the game went on. He made a play. They're down 10-7. It's deep in their own territory. He should be sacked maybe two times. He gets down. And John McCourt's a pretty good-sized guy. He's not as big as Spate, but he's still a big quarterback. Gets away, you know, it's third and long, converts. They, you know, get the first down. And he had a couple of big third down conversions. And from that, it seemed like, you know, I talked to him after the game. He didn't say it was like, so what does that do for your confidence? He was like, well, I had confidence going in, but I definitely think it helped get the offense into more of a rhythm. And they just started rolling, you know, and this is a team playing without their leading receiver, Tariq Black, who's out for a while. So we saw them really, him really build on it. And given how much they struggled, they went into that game. They were 1-for-10 in the red zone scoring touchdowns under Wilton Spate, and I think they were 3-for-3 the other day. So, you know, it's a big, maybe it was 4-for-4 actually. I think it was a big improvement by them under him. Now we'll see, you know, going forward, is he going to, you know, it's Jim Harbaugh when Spate is 100%, you know, what's he going to do with it? You know, he's been very complimentary of Spate when he was in there, even when everybody else was going, hey, something looks like it's wrong or he's not playing well.
Well, and the other part, too, was that Jim Harbaugh brought up the Purdue visiting locker room situation on a very hot day there. And, look, visiting locker rooms are not going to be the Ritz. We know that. But at the same time, I think he makes an interesting point about that, especially with the money that you mentioned. Fox. Fox is now kicking a lot of money for everybody right now across the board. Facility-wise, what does Purdue need to do more to keep up with everybody? Because obviously Purdue is starting to hit a little bit of stride in this particular season.
Yeah, I think so. Look, I mean, we were there on Friday. We toured the new facilities. Their football building's very nice. They have the biggest football-only weight room I've ever seen. That's, you know, brand new. But, you know, in terms of that, when I talked to their staff during the, you know, Saturday during the game, they, you know, Harbaugh had his team before the game not go in the locker room, had them in the, on the bus because it was in the mid-90s in outside, and then I was told it was over 110. So that's the way it felt like to Michigan staffers inside with no AC in the locker room. So, you know, I think it's one thing to have, you know, the paint your locker room, you know, the visiting locker room pink or whatever for psychological purposes. It's another thing for there to be, you know, no air conditioning and some other things that are basic, just things that I think out of beyond sportsmanship, just out of, you know, health issues, I think it's probably, you know, better. And I don't think this is a case of, hey, we're going to let the, you know, the opposing team be on the sideline where the sun shines the brightest or whatever. I just think there's some other things that Purdue needs to do. You know, they need to find the money or commit it to that. And I thought Harbaugh was right on that.
For the most part, four games into this season, there are a couple that started a week earlier, obviously, on what they call week zero. What to you has been maybe the most interesting item to this point? And is there anything you're looking for over the next two or three weeks that you will find interesting?
You know, USC to me has been interesting just because it's been a lot of, you know, Sam Darnold has 7 interceptions. He was got so much hype, and, you know, deservedly so. You guys saw him at the bowl game. But right, he has not been very sharp. And I know that they've tried to break in new receivers, but, you know, they have an interesting game. They got to go to Wazoo on Friday night. Not an easy trip to make. Washington State's undefeated. They have a really good offense. I want to see how USC responds in that. You know, they got to be a lot better than they were against anybody else, including that Texas game where they almost got taken down by a Texas team that shouldn't have been in there that long or made it that interesting.
You know what? Actually, it's interesting about that because Jack and I have talked about this. He lost two linemen, offensive linemen, that went to the NFL draft. And I don't think he has the time to do certain things that he may have had the ability to do down the stretch last year. We think that's played a little bit of a role just from the outside looking in.
Well, I think as much as anything, you know, he lost Juju Smith-Schuster, who was his go-to receiver. Darius Rodgers was another reliable part. And so now he's still got Deontay Burnett, who's really good. But I just think that has changed things a little bit. And I think maybe the expectations for him got way out of whack. I mean, he's definitely talented, but he's a kid who hasn't played all that much, and I still think he's developing, and, you know, we'll see how they get, you know, further along the way. It's not like they don't have talent. Ronald Jones, who, you know, didn't play last week, but is a really, really gifted running back. And Stephen Carr is a terrific freshman running back, so it's not like there aren't weapons around. I mean, Josh Rosen would probably kill to have some of the resources that Sam has across town. So we'll see how he responds. I mean, they struggled with Cal, who's much improved. I wonder if they're going to struggle again, because if they play the same level against Washington State, I think they're going to get beat.
What's it like for you having the Big Ten on Fox?
It's been awesome. You know, I've been to some of these stadiums before. You know, I've seen a lot of games at the Shoe in Columbus, but we got to do a game there last week. I'm looking forward to some of these other venues we're going to hit. You know, it's good to see Purdue and Michigan, you know, in our game. You know, this week I had Michigan State, Iowa, and just, you know, it's been fun as our Fox Sports college football has really grown just in the last couple of years since I've been here, but this is a big step forward. Yeah, cause we've had really good games, big Pac-12 and Big 12 games, but just having the Big Ten, especially how good the Big Ten is now, you know, with Urban Meyer getting cranked up at Ohio State, and obviously Harbaugh at Michigan, and now James at Penn State. I mean, you have a lot of star power there. You have the best group of coaches and really passionate fans. I mean, it doesn't have to be a top five matchup to get, you know, a couple of million viewers, because the fan bases at the biggest schools are so passionate and so devoted. It's really a great thing.
Bruce, an absolute pleasure. I hope to cross paths with you soon. If you end up getting a Penn State game, that'd be great. And thanks a lot for the time you gave us today.
My pleasure. Good to be on with you. Thanks.
So, Bruce Feldman joining us, and he's doing in fact, the entire Fox crew is doing a great job, and of course, he's one of them. So, and it's great to have him on the show. Matt Leon, final half hour. We'll talk about the Eagles' dramatic win yesterday as we come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PurdyInsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
We want to see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia is having their annual new Kia inventory adjustment sale. Every brand new Kia's price will be adjusted to make room for the 18. Sunbury Motors Kia has 12 2017 Kia Souls starting at $15,996. That's $3,204 off the iconic Kia Soul. Sunbury Motors Kia has the deepest discount on their most popular Kia Sorento this month only. Take $5,221 off all 2017 Sorentos. Hurry in. There's only 10 left starting at $24,989. There's $4,001 off 2017 Kia Optima. Optimus start at just $19,709. Remember, all Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. There's brand-new Kia Rios under $14,000. SMC is very motivated to sell every 2017 Kia in stock at the lowest prices of the year. Hurry in to Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Tax and tax extra. Offers expire 9/17. Restrictions apply. Kia's limited powertrain warranty. For details, the retailer, go to Kia.com.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Matt Leon, next half hour, we'll talk about the great Eagles win yesterday on a 61-yard field goal on the final play. It was incredible. It was dramatic, and Matt will talk about that as well. For Penn State, next up is going to be Indiana. This will be the Generations of Greatness game coming up. Lou Prado is going to join us on the show Wednesday. Spider Caldwell is going to be joining us on Thursday. And Spider had a lot of input into the uniforms. What's interesting about that is this. It does put, I'll tell you, it puts a strain on. It puts a strain actually on the equipment staff. Here's why. You're like, well, equipment staff, they just have to hand the uniforms out and go. remember, Penn State's going to wear gray face masks in the game.
Okay.
Well, you don't get new helmets. So the equipment staff has to take the blue face mask off all 125 helmets and put the gray ones on. Oh, and when the game's over, they have to take the gray ones off and put the blue ones back on. They have to put the numerical decals on the side of each helmet. And then when the game's over, they're going to have to take them all off. They ended up ordering 250 pairs of shoes for this game, white shoes. 250 pairs of white shoes. The players have worn them in practice twice each of the last two Sundays because they have to break them in. They're going to wear them again this week before they get to the game as well. At least once, maybe twice. We'll see how that plays out in practice. So it's not quite as simple as, hey, they're going to play. All right. They're going to wear uniform. Okay, great. Hey, they're going to wear helmets. There's actually a little bit of work that goes into it, but there's also a lot of thought that was put into the look that Penn State will have for the game Saturday against Indiana. I think it should be a lot of fun for the players. It should be a lot of fun for the fans. It'll bring back a lot of memories. It's a game where Jack Ham is going to be honored in conjunction with the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. We'll get into more of that as the week goes along. So it's a big weekend for Jack. And if I could handpick any person I've been around that should get recognized in Beaver Stadium, it's Jack Ham. You think about everything he's accomplished, College Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame. This will be a Pro Football Hall of Fame link on Saturday. As a businessman and obviously as a broadcaster, where I can confidently tell everyone that I think he's the best analyst in college football, period. But the really neat thing about Jack is Jack has absolutely no ego at all. None. He's as down-to-earth gets, and you'd never know that he has this long list of accomplishments that anybody would break their right arm for. I can tell you this, not every game, not every week, every single play, he makes me better. Every one of them. So he deserves it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. And the reason they've been able to do that is they put the customer first. Auto, home, life, business insurance. They've had the ability to make sure that they find the right insurance at the right price for their customers. And if there's, unfortunately, a claim, and that's why you have insurance, they will go to work for you right away. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. As we mentioned, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Boy, 9 Florida players are now facing felonies on a fraud investigation. And you're talking 62 counts they're talking now. And these are players that are already suspended. They are already suspended right now from the Florida program. Now, we'll see how it plays out. We'll find out truth, fact, fiction, one way or the other, and see how it plays out. But 62 felony counts, it's a big number with 9 different players in the Florida program. Big. The Penn State won, of course, on Saturday over Iowa 21-19. Great win for the Nittany Lions because of the way they did it. You're going to find those moments where you have to go on the road someplace. You need to make something happen for yourself. You need to make a drive. The patience that they showed And this is something, every Wednesday they work on this. They always are put in a situation. You're here. This is what you need. How many timeouts, if you have any, to get there. Well, this is a case of 142, 80 yards, two timeouts to work with. In the end, they got it done. Four different receivers catching passes along the way. It was a very smart, patient, and efficient drive by Penn State. The big fourth down pass play to Saeed Blacknall kept the drive alive. That was big. That was very big when that happened. And I think that the safety hung over that game. The defense gave up three plays in the game. For the most part, the defense played really well. They held Iowa down to only like 215 yards in total in the game. Not bad when you can do that.
Yeah, I was glad that Dick from Milton brought up Brandon Smith when he called up last hour, because there was two players I wanted to bring up to you. One of them was Brandon. I mean, he just launched himself like a missile on one special teams play. But yeah, and then had the touchdown-saving tackle. And I wanted to also bring up Troy Apke. Troy had a great pass breakup in the end zone and, of course, had that block field goal attempt as well. So two other players other than, of course, Trace and Saquon that jumped off the page.
All of those things add up in a two-point win. All of them add up. It makes a big difference for you. A punt that is downed, as we mentioned, by Blake Gilligan at the one-yard line by Irvin Charles ends up leading to a safety. Now, things like that, those are the difference makers in a game where you're now splitting hairs as to why you ended up winning. On a night where you had 579 yards in total offense. Now, they're going to discuss, of course, obviously, at some point, hey, guys, let's finish drives for touchdowns here. But like, Iowa deserves a lot of credit, by the way, for how that played out in the game. I mean, they deserve a lot of credit for that. And Josie Jewell, by the way, let's give credit where credit's due on him, Sean. Josie Jewell is a heck of a football player.
He was all over the place. Got to give him a ton of credit. You want to talk about, flying toward the ball. I mean, it was very, I would say, very Ryan Shazier-like. It didn't matter what play and where they were at on the field. He definitely was it's like what Gary Dolphin, your chat with Gary last Friday, just how Iowa is able to, find players that, they're not marquee guys out of high school, but they can definitely mold them into really tough, great football players.
I know this will stun everybody, but Saquon Barkley was named the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week. I'm wondering now, and as I said, I brought it up with James in the post game about Saquon Barkley. I rarely ask him about Barkley. Rarely. Quarterback club, pregame show, postgame show. I don't ask, you'll ask about this guy made a difference, that guy made a difference, or this play or that series or something in the course of a game. And I thought about it as he was giving an answer that Jack had asked him a question about the defense, I believe. And I thought to myself, you know what? I mean, obviously, Barkley had a record-setting night for Penn State. Record-setting night. And I thought to myself, the funny thing is, I never ask him about Barkley. Never. So that's why I brought it up in the postgame with him. And, of course, it's one of those moments where, obviously, something like that, he took off with the answer. But you're talking about a guy who touched the ball 43 times in the game Saturday night. 28 rush attempts, 12 receiving, and 3 on kickoffs or on the free kick after the safety. Of the 43 times he touched the ball, 21 of them, he had 7 yards or better. Are you kidding me? How remarkable that is? The 358, remarkable. Hurdling a guy, remarkable. Some of the cuts that he made, remarkable. But you're talking about a guy that on 21 touches out of 43, he gained 7 yards or better for his team on a sweltering night. it doesn't take, obviously, a genius to say that we are witnessing something and someone incredibly special. We've felt that way for the 2 years we've watched him. And what he did the other night is something that's never been done in the history of Penn State football. In fact, he came very close to a 100-100 night. He had 211 rushing, and he had 94 receiving. He almost had a 200-100 night. Remarkable.
No, I'll tell you what. This game, 5 years, 10 years, 15 from now, when we're watching BTN, we'll be watching this over and over again. And I would not be surprised if they'll ask you to narrate something. I mean, that was just an absolute game for the ages. Just the absolute... just right down to the last second. It goes back to what Joe Susan said last hour. You got to play right to the last second. They sure did.
They had to. Iowa forced them to play that way. There's another team out there that played really, really well, I thought, the other night. And I give Iowa a lot of credit for how they played. Now, was Penn State the better team? Yes, Penn State was the better team. You don't pile up 579 yards in total offense, and the other guy gets about, what they get, 214, 215 in total offense in a game like that. And, you know, where you're not the better team. Well, they're the better team in that game. And they were. I mean, they were the better team in the overall, but... you've got to score. And there's certain elements that came into it. Number one, Penn State got the safety. Number two, the block kick by Penn State. Yes, Iowa blocked a kick too, but the block kick. I mean, right there, you look at the 2 point, the safety, and the block kick. That's five. That's a 5 point swing right there in the game. Alabama won big. Clemson had to fight for a while with Boston College into the second half, but then they won. Oklahoma had to survive. They beat Baylor 49-41 in a typical average afternoon in the Big 12. Penn State won. USC was 13-13, finally beat Cal 30-13. Oklahoma State was number six. They lost. Washington won. Big win for them at Colorado. The key is just keep pushing forward. Just take each weekend, win it, go to the next weekend. I mean, that's what it is. In the end, this will all weed itself out. And here's the next part. I realize that you want your team to get great recognition. I completely understand that you want your team to get its just due and to get great recognition. Remember that the college football playoff is not determined on September 26th. In fact, the first poll won't come out until the first week in November. And the next part is a Bruce Feldman, a Kirk Herbstreit, a Desmond Howard, a Joel Klatt, may put out at this moment what their top four is. And maybe some of them include Penn State, maybe they don't. Number one, it spurs conversation, so there's nothing wrong with that. It's just their current opinion, nothing wrong with that. But I want Penn State fans to remember this. If you don't feel, oh, we're not getting any respect, he doesn't have us in our top four. Remember, it doesn't matter about those opinions and those tweets in the end, because they're not a part of the college football committee. The college football playoff committee consists of 12 people. Those are the 12 people whose opinions count. And I say that with all due respect to everybody delivering opinions. I can sit here and I can give you what I think are my top four teams that should be in the college football playoff if it were played today. I can do that for you right now. And my opinion means absolutely nothing. Just like my opinion is going to mean absolutely nothing about it on November 10th or November 17th, because I don't have a vote. 12 people have a vote. 12 people have a say. Those are the 12 opinions you need to be concerned with. What is there? And you won't know what those opinions are until November. So between now and then, don't get too high or too low when it comes to the opinion of a writer or the opinion of an announcer. They don't hold sway on this. 12 people in a room hold sway. And in fact, I believe the College Football Playoff Committee, I believe, is doing something the NCAA Tournament Committee has done for years. The NCAA Tournament Committee in the last 5 or 6 years has been bringing select reporters into the room in late January to go through the selection process and actually have them participate in a mock selection process so that the writer or broadcaster, the writers or broadcasters that are in the room, can then see all the factors that are that come into play as to how the 36 at-large teams are selected. All the factors that come into play that then after you select them, how do you seed them? How do you put pods together? Things like that. It allows them, through transparency, to see how the process on that particular day works, which then should be a tip-off as to how the process is going to work on Selection Weekend. I believe the College Football Playoff Committee, I believe, is doing something like that tomorrow with select broadcasters and reporters. So they can see how it works and what are some of the factors they're looking at between tape, between matchups, between analytics, things like that. You know, what factors are they using to come to some of the conclusions they'll eventually come to in the month of November and as to how it plays out? But don't get too high or too low on anyone's opinions. There's nothing wrong with anybody's opinion right now. For example, if they don't have Penn State in their Final Four, don't get mad about it. It doesn't mean much except it's their opinion, which they are absolutely entitled to have at this particular moment. Opinions change over the weeks based on how the results go. And it spurs conversation. Nothing wrong with that. In the end, though, it's only the opinions of 12 people in a room that are going to matter. And the people that people are getting a little bit high and a little bit low about in terms of their opinions, oh, X loves us, B doesn't love us, C hates us. It's okay, because guess what? A, B, and C don't have a vote. 12 people have a vote. And they are not going to be tweeting out anything or delivering opinions on anything between now and the final selection. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I'll just take a moment here at the end. Obviously, the majority of sports talk right now does deal with what the president said on Friday night, the response of the players, unity in the league. That's been talked about a lot. I'm going to assume I did not get a chance to listen to it today because of other business, but I'll assume that Dan Patrick addressed it in a significant amount of time today. Would that be correct? Sean?
I actually did not listen to Dan Patrick today. I was busy too.
Ratings crushed.
I know.
what I have found interesting is that whenever the president said it, tweeted it, whatever, it received a lot of justified publicity. And then the stories started coming out, and what were the stories about? How will the players react? Right? Okay? How would the players react? Was that the pronoun? How would the league react? Would it be fair for me to say that, Sean?
Absolutely. I thought Tony Dungy, I think last night may have been a little over the top saying, this is a big day for the NFL. We stand united. But we're going down a slippery slope here. It's just kind of uncomfortable to talk about politics and sports at the same time.
Right. Well, let me bring up just one quick part here that for some reason, I don't understand why this hasn't been brought up because nobody's brought it up. How are the fans going to react? It's always about how the player's going to react. How's the league going to react? Well, the fan is the consumer. And for the fan, the consumer, it may not bother them.
I can tell you this. Two of my Facebook friends, one of them a hardcore Steeler fan, because of the Steelers not being out on the field during the national anthem yesterday, he says he's no longer a Steelers fan and no longer going to watch NFL games. And another buddy of mine, he said, that's it. I'm done. I'm now free on Sundays. I'm going to spend more time with my family, and I'm not going to watch NFL anymore. I'm finished.
Yeah,
that was pretty strong.
Yeah, what was the number one selling jersey in the NFL overnight? Alejandro Villanueva.
Bang.
Now, the ratings were down last night on Sunday Night Football, down 8% from the Packers-Falcons game to Raiders and Redskins. Now, Raiders and Redskins are a pretty good matchup. Raiders are an up-and-coming team. The Redskins have a loyal, deep fan base that's national. Yet the ratings were down 12% from the same weekend a year ago, down 8% from last week. So it's now next week's not going to help them. It's going to be a very difficult gauge because the Seahawks and the Colts, that has all the potential to not be a ratings winner at all. So that one we may have to take a pass on. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the stands, if anything. There may be nothing. And what happens with TV ratings. And because the consumer, in the end, where you have all this money for entertainment choices, you can choose. Hey, look, I've got I've got an X amount that I can spend on entertainment. I can go to a football game. I've got X amount to spend. You know what? I've got some choices. I'm going to go to a concert. You know, there's a lot of entertainment choices out there, of which the NFL happens to be one of them. It's going to be interesting to see how the consumer reacts to all of this, and if they react as if it's no big deal, that's no big deal. If the consumer, you know, it's a big deal to those who are protesting because they're trying to send a message about something. But the consumer may sit back and go, okay, right? Or the consumer may say, you know what? Like you talked about your two Facebook friends. That's all you have is two. That's not.
I'll work on that.
Yeah, that's sad. I mean,
vetting process. I'll tell you one thing may hurt ratings too. There were a couple of games where there were some very questionable calls from the referees yesterday.
Sure.
It makes you wonder.
You know what's interesting about yesterday, though? I thought the first 2 weeks the quality of football in the NFL was not exciting and was not very good. I thought yesterday there were a series of really exciting games. The Eagles finish couldn't have been any more dramatic. Packers and Bengals, national game of the week on Fox, couldn't have been any more dramatic. First time in 8 tries that Aaron Rodgers has won a playoff game. I mean, has won an overtime game. And there are two or three others that came down that were really good games, starting with the Rams 49ers game on Thursday night. So the excitement level of the games was up. It's going to be interesting to see how the fans react to this, both in ticket sales, showing up at stadiums, and in TV ratings. It bears watching.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.